Hello and welcome to episode number 59 of the WP Cafe Show with me, Keith Devon.
And with me, Mark Wilkinson. Welcome along, everybody. Nice to be back here on a very sunny Friday afternoon. It's like 28, 29 degrees here, which is toasty, to say the least. What's it like down there?
I don't know the temperature exactly, but I'm pretty sure, because I've just had to shut the window and the door, that I'm going to be sweating by the end of this show. So, yeah, we'll soon find out. It's getting pretty toasty in this garden office of mine.
Yeah, so it's been hot the last few weeks for sure. Welcome along. If you are along with us live on YouTube or on Twitter, and please let us know you're here, who you are, where you are. Be nice to see some names come up. Hi to Charlie. Thanks for joining us. So this week, what is on our agenda, Keith?
We're going to talk a little bit about Q&A sessions at WordCamps, because that got a little bit of chat after WordCamp Europe.
Yep.
We're going to talk a little bit about some of the interesting stuff that's coming up in WordPress from a developer's point of view, based on an email sent out by the WordPress developer blog, one of Justin Tadlock's recent emails that I got, and I just thought a few interesting things in there, and some of them I don't really understand that well, but I think it's just worth kind of keeping an eye on what's going on, because we do a bit of moaning on this show, and sometimes I think it's good to, you know, balance that out with a little bit of here's some of the cool stuff that's happening in WordPress. So we'll do a little bit of that, and then was there anything else on our list? Oh yeah, there was just one thing I kind of wanted to chat about and kind of put to the dear listeners, just a little question about adding links. We'll see. Anything. Yeah, exciting finale to the show. And as always, I'm always happy to take any questions from people watching along on YouTube live. Pop any questions, comments, whatever in the chat. We've had some really good shows recently where there's been lots of chat. Along in the live show, which we love. So thanks very much for that. Q&A's.
It's Q&A's, so let's get started. So after WordCamp Europe, which we didn't attend, I'm sure some that watching did attend, hopefully you enjoyed it. It looked like a really fun event. There was some discussion afterwards about the Q&A after people's talks. So usually if you've not been to a WordCamp, the speakers will give a talk for whatever long, 20, 25 minutes. And then there'll be time for questions at the end, usually 10, 15 minutes for people or the audience to ask questions. And there was some chat about the problems with that sort of formatting and issues. And I just wanted to raise some of the concerns, and maybe you could let us know what you think about this. But I think some of the concerns were that the people who were asking questions weren't necessarily asking questions. Mm. It was often like a comment about the talk. That didn't really have a question in it. And also that the speaker might not actually want questions at that point. And therefore, you know, is it something that a speaker is obliged to do to actually offer a Q&A session at the end of their talk? I'd be interested to hear what you think about that. So personally, I've spoken at WordCamps. I do Q&A sessions at the end. And I can see why some speakers don't like them, because obviously you don't know what the questions are going to be.
Yeah.
So you can't really prepare for that. You don't know what you're going to be asked and so forth. But I think it's a really important part, personally, of a talk where someone can ask questions based on what you've been discussing. But I totally get the point about not, you know, the questions that get asked aren't necessarily questions. I think one of the tweets I was reading was like, basically some people are often, it's like self-promotion, you know, about services and things that they have or whatever, or the website and so forth. So does the format need to change? Should we be carrying on with questions and answers after talks in that format? Should they be, you know, pre-vetted questions that get delivered to the speaker and then the speaker answers them on stage? I don't know. What are your thoughts, Keith?
Yeah, I think Q&A sessions after talks are a real mixed bag, and they can be a complete waste of time, and it depends who's asking the question. I think it's all about the quality of the question, and the motives for asking it. Like you say, I think some people, it depends, massively depends on the topic. Some people occasionally have a bit of a chip on their shoulder about something around the topic, and they just want to have their say about it. So that's not particularly useful, and that can put the speaker really on the back foot, and it doesn't create like a particularly nice environment. So that can happen. The self-promotion thing definitely happens. So people just stand up and talk about a project that they've been working on for ages. This actually happened in the Q&A after the keynote at WordCamp Europe. I noticed pretty much the only question I watched. It was just a really long rambling. This is, I'm from such and such an organization, and this is all the great work that we've been doing, blah, 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 blah. And I can't even remember what the question was. And Matt was kind of like, I think he was kind of similar. It's like, yeah, you're doing great work. Thanks. We'll be sure to look into it and support it. Kind of thing. It was like, what was the value in that? Like, it raised the profile of that particular organization. Great. But was that of good benefit to the community as a whole? Maybe it is. And maybe this is the exact format, but for that kind of thing. Maybe keynote, especially those kind of, it wasn't a state of the word, but that kind of thing at the end of one of the big conferences, maybe that should just be, this is your chance to put something quite pointed directly at the people at the top. So maybe that's fine. But
I guess that's a little different, that talk, isn't it, in a way? Because I think there's an element of that, being able to actually speak to the people at the top, if that makes sense. I might be wrong.
As a speaker, I've done it not as many times as you have, but I spoke at a few WordCamps and meetups and things, and that can be the most nerve-wracking part of the talk by a mile. Because you don't know what's about to come at you. Sometimes you don't hear it properly. Sometimes, it's very technical. Because this is another thing. Sometimes the person sitting there asking the question wants to be a smart arse. Let's just call it what it is.
Yeah.
And they put their hand up and they're like, I know better than you. Why are you doing it this way? Why are you not doing it that way? Kind of thing. So it can be really difficult. So I do think that they're a valuable part of an event, a valuable part of a talk, but potentially they could be pre-vetted, maybe by the MC. So maybe you could have something like, there's a hashtag, tweet your questions using this hashtag, and the MC grabs five of those questions as you're talking and says, okay, well, these are the questions we're going to do. And then nothing can just come out of left field and totally surprise the audience and the speaker.
Yeah, I think something along those lines would help. I do think it's important that if you're going to do Q&A, like, the person who wants to ask the question gets to actually ask it in front of the audience rather than being read out from someone else. So personally, I think that the MCs need to do I was going to use the word better job. They're doing an awesome job. I think they need better guidelines that they can stop questions when they're not questions and just say, can you get to your question, please? Because this is not a question. Mm-hmm. And I also think that the speakers need to be informed that you don't have to answer the question. Like you were saying there, sometimes, and I've had this in talks, someone asks a really technical question.
Yeah.
And it's like you end up trying to talk through a bit of code, and actually it's just not appropriate. Like, the speaker should just be able to say, do you know what, that's not really beneficial to everyone else, speak to me afterwards and we'll have a chat about it, and be confident in doing that. I'm just saying, I'm not answering that now, that's fine, it's a good question, but we'll have a chat on Twitter, or we'll have an email conversation, or we'll just meet afterwards for a coffee. That sort of thing. I think that would be, so it's because as a speaker, a lot of speakers, including myself, you get nervous, don't you? And you feel as though you have to answer everyone's question.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I think they should be empowered to say, I can't answer that right now, and that's fine. That should be absolutely fine. There shouldn't be a problem with that at all. So I think that would be something to look at. I also wonder whether there shouldn't be different types of Q&A. Like, Tony just says here, like, some speakers at WordCamp London invite questions after the talk at the stage, after the room is clearing. So could there be a different type of Q&A session, whereas instead of the whole room...
Something's gone a bit crazy with your audio, Mark. Yeah, I think you're all
right. Welcome back?
Yep.
Perfect. Back. Instead of the whole room having to listen to it, you could have a little breakout Q&A session for 10 minutes. Anyone that wants to ask a question could go into a separate area or something and ask a question to the speaker. A bit more informal. Speaker doesn't feel like they stood in front of everyone answering the question. Maybe that's an option as well.
It's just a lot more logistics around that, but yeah.
Absolutely.
So my idea on the vetting wasn't that the MC would read out the question, but that they would say such and such had a question about X, and then they would invite that person to ask the question. So it still comes directly from the viewer.
The MC gets to decide. I guess the question then is like, what's the criteria for like picking the questions? Because it'd be, you know, the MC might get like 50 questions in and they've got to pick five or whatever.
And you could, and the question tweet could still be very short. Oh yeah, what about this? And then they actually stand up and they give the whole 5 minute spiel, including all the self promotion and all the whatever. So,
I think it's worth trying some of these things though, definitely, because I think they've always been the same. Just Q&A, hand the mic over, and off you go. Was maybe we could try some of these different things.
Yeah,
see if they work. If they don't work, you know, I don't know. But
it's
definitely nerve wracking for speakers, and I think it's important that people understand that when you're asking a question, and you know, make it a bit more simple and not a big long story, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely.
What does everyone else think? It'd be interesting to hear what you think. If you've been to WordCamps, if you've spoken at WordCamps, or I guess any other sort of talks as well, not just WordCamps. Be interesting to hear what you think about them. But
yeah,
I think they should try maybe a different format for the questions and answers and see if it works. And if it doesn't work, great. At least you've tried it personally. But we'll see.
Yeah, agreed. Cool. Next up, so onto this email. So this is from, it's not just an email, it's also a blog post, but I'm just signed up to the newsletter. So if you go to developer.wordpress.org/news, you'll probably find it. It is titled What's New for Developers, June 2023. So this is just a really useful series of blog posts by Justin Tadlock, who we have a lot of love for on this show. And it's just cool new stuff in WordPress. It's quite uplifting in a way, because as I said, you know, you can get bogged down in some of the doom and gloom. Yeah. But this is like, yeah, a little peek into what's coming and kind of what's exciting. So he's highlighted three things I thought we could just quickly talk about. I don't know much about these. I've done some research. I've clicked on some of the links to try to understand a bit more about what's going on. But I'll just briefly cover them and just introduce people to them a little bit. So the first one, and this is what I'm quite excited about, is called Synced Patterns. So we complained a long time ago, it feels, about the fact that in WordPress we can build these patterns for our clients. They use the patterns over and over and over again on their website, you know, hundreds of pages, potentially thousands of blog posts using these particular patterns. And then one day the client comes and says, do you know what? We don't really like that pattern anymore. We'd like it to look more like this. And you're like, good luck. Go and edit all of those pages and posts, because there's no way for me to do it programmatically or globally. Well, it looks like that's changing. Which is quite exciting. So it looks like the idea here is that we create patterns that are
synced.
No, there's a, what is it called? When you can only edit content, we can already do this with patterns. You can like lock it so that only the content is editable. So content editable patterns, but that are synced. So, and it looks like what's going to happen is that they're going to kind of be wrapped in a container div that has a specific class on it, so that's how WordPress kind of knows what it is, and also how we could potentially target it with specific styles or whatever. But it just sounds like a solution to a big problem. I wish we had it a couple of years ago when we were building a particular project, but for me this is really cool, and this is the kind of stuff that we need to be celebrating with WordPress and with Gutenberg, because we do all the complaining that things aren't quite right, but when they're fixing them and adding these features, I think that's great.
I completely agree, and I read the post, and it mentions that there is some, you know, there's some people working on this, and there's some problems that they need to get around, obviously.
Yeah.
And the fact that the trying to get to these things. And I don't think they're set in stone as to the way in which this will actually work. I think they're just trying things out to see if they can get to a point where they can get something that works. For me, more importantly, there's been an acknowledgement that this actually is a problem and it is something that needs solving.
Yeah.
Because there didn't seem to be any appetite to solve this for a while. I was on the Build Mode Live a couple of weeks ago and Nick Diego was on and did some talks about curating the editor, which was great stuff. And it was mentioned in there as well. And everyone was like, this is super important. We need to do it. So the fact that it's been mentioned, it's been written on this post that I know they've called them sync patterns. Maybe they'll end up something else. But the fact that we need the ability to do this is more important than the actual ability, the way it happens, in my opinion. It's been acknowledged that it's a problem and something that people need to be able to do, which is really super important.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly that. So that's cool. Looking forward to seeing that. Come to life in the hopefully near future.
Yeah.
The next one, not such a major highlight for me, but the details block says it's no longer experimental, expected to ship with 6.3. So details is an HTML element for things like FAQs. Natively with HTML, you can create a kind of like an accordion style. So you've got a title with a little down arrow beside it. You click that and it expands a little bit of content. So the content bit is within a summary element within the details element. So that's native HTML, but they've made a block for it, which I think is brill. So we don't need to kind of hack our way to solutions like that. We can use the proper markup. So, you know.
Is there anyone else in the chat that's thinking, I never even knew there was a details and a summary HTML elements?
Yeah, but there you go, I don't think it's particularly well known, but yeah, it's there and it should be used when it's appropriate to do so. So
yeah, why not? Excited. Yeah,
yep.
Cool.
And then the next bit I found a bit more confusing. So this is the interactivity API and the behaviors UI. I was like, what the hell are those?
I read the original post on this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And came away thinking, what the hell are those? I don't know what you'd use. I don't understand them at all. I think it's linked in this post. Someone was using an example of liking a post, essentially, and you'd use it for that. I don't quite understand how and why, but maybe someone can let us know.
I don't know. It looks like... it's a way to create interactive kind of front ends in a standardized way, basically, so we're not all doing things completely differently. I found it a bit strange. I was like, and then it kind of compares itself to alpine.js at some point, and I was like, so this is like Alpine for WordPress. I'm like, my first reaction to that was, why are we not just kind of using something like Alpine? I've never used Alpine, so I don't really know like what it's capable of and what it does. But that was my first thought. If it's like this, but for WordPress, well, why are we not just using that thing? I think it did a really poor job of kind of explaining what it was and how it can be used. And But it also did pique my interest. Like, I was like, okay, this sort of sounds good and interesting. I'm all for standardizing things. I'm all for making the developer experience easier. And the example, the behaviors UI, at the moment, just looks like a light box. So that is the behavior. I couldn't see that there were more than one behavior currently, but it looks like something you can basically turn on for certain types of block. At the moment, it's only the image block, I think, but you can basically say, yeah, I want images to have a lightbox option, and that in the advanced section of the block sidebar, you know, you can turn on that behavior. So I don't know what other behaviors there might be in the future. I don't know if there'll be like scroll behaviors or, you know, I don't really know. Again, it didn't do a brilliant job of selling it to me, but I can sort of feel like there's something interesting there, and people are going to do really cool stuff with it. Sounds like a generally a good thing. I don't know, but definitely check it out if you're interested in this kind of stuff. So it seems like at least the light box for images is going to be shipped in soon, like bundled in with everything.
I don't know.
Maybe it does somewhere further into the documentation or the literature. Maybe it explains what some of those future behaviors might be, but currently the only one I could see was the lightbox one.
It talks about file block having behavior, I think, but
right.
I'm not sure what that would be.
File block. Maybe.
Oh, no, that was Interactivity API, sorry.
Yeah.
I'm confused as to what they are.
I'm a little bit. We seem to be confused most of the time.
We need a blog post so Mark can understand it.
Yeah.
Option.
I'm sure it'll come. I'm sure there'll be, like, at the minute this is all kind of experimental and in development, so I'm sure once things are a bit more stable or whatever, then there'll be people writing about it. Hopefully Justin, because he's so good at it. Lots of other stuff in that newsletter / blog post. Lots of stuff around plugins and themes and events and resources and loads of stuff, so definitely check it out.
Yeah, if you're not reading the developer.wordpress.org stuff, I would recommend it. There is some really good articles come out at the moment that are like a level up from what we've seen before in terms of the walkthrough of doing things. So if you're not having a look at that, I'd highly recommend it. And as Keith said, there is a box somewhere on there you can stick your email address in, and every time there's a new post, you'll get it into your inbox, which is actually quite handy. So if you are a developer and you're looking to learn about what's coming up in WordPress, then it is definitely worth signing
up
for.
And I think this really did scratch an itch for me, because one of the things I've always said recently is it's so hard to follow what's going on with WordPress development, because you've got Slack channels and Make blogs, and you've got stuff on GitHub, you've got stuff on, just like it's all over the place. And now they've kind of realized that, and this is some of the team automatic being like, okay, let's try to like pull stuff together, curate stuff, and deliver it in a way that makes sense to developers. So
Just looking at the list of like the latest posts, which is on the news page, there's some really interesting ones there to have a look at. So definitely I would have a look at that if you want to follow the stuff that's going on. It's most helpful than it has been in the past.
Yep.
So definitely look at it.
Good.
Right. Our last topic was your blocks.
Yeah.
Well, go for it.
I just want to put this out there to people watching along. If you're using the block editor and you want to group, for example, an image, a heading, and a small bit of paragraph text, and you want that whole item, you might call it a card, to be clickable, as in it links somewhere, how do you do it? Because it feels to me like that is kind of just one of the most common patterns that I can think of online, and I can't seem to do it in the block editor. So if you can hear a persistent chirping noise, by the way, it is my resident chaffinch.
Which is extremely loud.
It's been annoying Mark all week. I can't shut the door, though. It's too hot in here. I will boil to death.
It's not too bad.
Yeah, good. So I don't know how to do it.
So I guess one method of doing it would be you just add a link to each item in your thing. So you've got like an image, add a link to it, the same link, add the same link to the heading, add the same link to the paragraph. But each of those would then be styled as a link.
That's true. Yeah.
As in, the paragraph would be underlined, as would the heading, usually, if that's what your link styling is, obviously.
So, link block with... I didn't think you... A link block...
So this is just Sam's point. Sam. Can't you just have a link block with nested blocks inside? I didn't realize there was a link block, but clearly there is.
There isn't. I don't think there is.
I have not come across a link block before, but if Sam has a link block, maybe you've built your own.
Or maybe he's using a collection at like a extension collection or something.
Like these libraries of blocks that you can
Like generate blocks or something. I don't know if they have something like that. I think that's what I'm gonna have to go for unless we roll our own. Or there are some other ideas around this. I know Nick sent me something earlier. Nick Wilmot sent me something earlier to look at a technique for getting around this. So I might be able to do it with a class. But if I do it with a class, how am I going to add the href? I don't know. It feels like something that's... there we go. Sam just says it's third party, not core. What's the third party, Sam? Tell me.
Please,
tell me.
Know.
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't think we can do that in core, which is feels like we should be able to.
You just need a group block that allows you to put a link on it.
Exactly.
And because then obviously, because it's a group, you can just put any other blocks inside it then.
Exactly. Yeah.
But that would, because you'd be changing the markup of the block, so it wouldn't work. So you'd have to build your own link block, I think.
Right. Yes, because you can't extend blocks in that way. You can't change the markup. You can add attributes. Yeah.
Yeah, but you can't add just change the div for an A because it would break, wouldn't it? So
exactly. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
So you need to create a link block. Off you go.
How annoying. Well, they already exist. They already exist as third party options.
All right.
So I didn't really want to have to go down that route.
I don't want to have to go down the route of adding an entire block library that we're never going to use most of them for, to just get one block.
Yeah.
Better if they were all separate plugins, really.
And the other thing, missing is a grid. Unless I'm wrong again, someone correct me if I'm wrong, I still don't think I can add grids. And I don't necessarily mean CSS grid, like display grid. It could be a flexbox div. But, okay, what am I trying to say here?
Is that not one of the options for the group block, when you to choose from the three?
But you can't, as far as I'm aware, set the width of the children so that they line up into grids.
Right.
Into columns. So if someone can explain to me how to do that as well, it'd be handy. So what I'm trying to say here, go for it, yeah.
Could you do that by adding a class to the group, and then, I know it's using CSS, so that every time the CSS class of the group is grid, it does that to the children elements inside.
Yeah, and we've actually done that before. We've implemented that before.
But for again, client. It's not core. You'd have to do some.
And the UI for it's horrible, having to use custom classes and stuff. Sam says, columns don't wrap, do they? You have to have multiple columns for multiple rows. Yeah, exactly. And what happens, Sam? So the problem that I see on some of our client sites is, say you want like two rows of three columns. So you've got six items. So it looks great on desktop. And then you come down to a certain size, and the columns then go 50-50, no matter how many columns you've set it to. So it'll eventually be two columns instead of three. So it'll be like one, two, and then a third on its own row, and then one, two, and then a third on its own row. So it's not a proper grid. So there's just certain breakpoints where it just looks really naff, and that's what I'm trying to get around. It feels like we should be able to say, I want to create a grid of three columns, and then just stick stuff in. Like, I've done it before, like you said, using custom classes, and it's so simple. It just feels like that should be a core feature.
I feel like with my newfound block skills that I could create a block variation of the group block, because all we would be doing is changing the attributes, adding classes. So when you add a group, you create a new variation of the block group, and you say, I want a three column grid block, which just drops a group on the page and then sets a class on that group. And then as you start adding items inside it, and because it's a variation, it would show in the inserter. You could go insert, type in three columns, and it would come up. All variations show in the inserter, don't they? As like their own block.
That's pretty cool. And then can you swap between them? Could we go from a three to a two using some kind
maybe
of
with the transform
UI?
Block thing? Yeah, maybe it'd work.
Maybe that's one we need to look into. Again, I'm sure this is a solve problem in a third party world, but I yeah, it feels like those two things are high up on my current list for wants in core, but maybe I'm just trying to rely on core too much. Let me get away from that.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, Nick says, I'll just put this on the screen actually, if I can find my mouse arrow. Nick says, I use generate blocks container block, which allows a link to be applied to it. The same block allows width to be specified at each breakpoint, and it supports flex block, flex box. Get that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds like a good block.
Generate blocks has some kind of cool stuff. I wonder. I mean, I've been looking at it for about a year without
maybe
actually
the future
dipping into it.
Maybe that'll solve all our problems.
Yeah, I just keep thinking, like, stuff comes along so quickly in Gutenberg and the block editor, you know, it is improving all the time. And I worry about tying some of our work to systems like this when in the near future they've kind of become obsolete. But maybe we just need to think more in the moment, like, how are we getting this done today? Mm-hmm. And then maybe it holds us back a bit, trying to be a bit too future-focused.
Peter says, linking a group container in generate blocks, but it's the pro version. So I presume that's the one that Nick's talking about. Maybe you have to buy the pro generate blocks to do that. Cadence section block is a free, I believe. So maybe that's another option for people to look at.
Cool.
Yeah. Right. Let's wrap it up there.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for joining us, everybody. It's good to chat. Thanks for all the comments. If you did enjoy the show, we'd really appreciate a like on YouTube. It doesn't take much, but it makes a big difference. And also, if you do want to be notified of future content like this, you can subscribe. And I think you can still click a notification bell on YouTube, or if that's disappeared, I'm not sure. Something looked like it had changed recently to me. But So do that too. We're also on your podcast player of choice. Just look for the WP Cafe show and you'll find us on there. And until next time, it might be a different day again next week. I haven't even spoken to you about that, Mark, but we'll let you know. And that's another good reason to subscribe, so you won't miss it, even if we change the day. But we'll see you at some point next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.